From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, we break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in the Academy Award nominations. Then the actresses in Alfonso Cuarón's movie Roma both received Oscar nominations today. They discuss bringing the characters to life and the unusual audition process they went through.
The only thing I had to do was sit down and talk about my life, how my childhood was, who were my parents, not really about my job or my life as an actress, but my life as a person.
And Black Panther's Oscar-nominated production designer Hannah Beekler is the first African-American nominated in her category. All that after this break. There are a few different ways to look at the Academy Award nominations, which were announced earlier today. There's the average moviegoer's view, there's the Academy voter's view, the Oscar blogger's view, but right now, we're going to get a film critic's view. Claudia Puig is the president of the LA Film Critics Association. She's also a frequent guest on KPCC's Film Week. When she came by the studio today, I asked her which films she loved and which ones were nominated that she thought didn't really pass muster.
I am Team Roma all the way, so I am thrilled to see the amount of nominations that Roma got. So that kind of mitigates some of my disappointments. But Leave No Trace, I thought was a wonderful film. It actually has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Everybody has loved the film, those who have seen it. The problem is very few have seen it. So that's one that I felt was left off, at least for screenplay.
No nominations at all.
No nominations
at all. Including for Deborah Granick for director.
And the same for First Reformed. It did get some nominations, but I think Ethan Hawke's performance was certainly worthy. Worthier than, say, Bradley Cooper's performance for A Star is Born. I personally think Bohemian Rhapsody and Green Book did not belong on the Best Picture list at all, though I'm not surprised. But there were smaller films and, films that were worthy that got overlooked, as happens every year.
Roma has gotten a lot of critical attention, and it's won a lot of awards, including the top prize from the LA Film Critics. But it also has been criticized recently. There's a recent piece in the LA Review of Books by filmmaker and critic Scout Tafoya, and he said the movie, to his mind, quote, is made to appease the ruling class, fawning in its praise of power. You're shaking your head. You don't agree.
I don't agree. I'm Mexican. And so this is a picture that's near and dear to my heart. I lived in Mexico in the 1970s. This brings back a lot of powerful memories. He's not saying it's okay to have her be on the outside of the family. He's pointing out that while she was regarded as a family member in some instances, in some other instances, she's on the outside. And I think that comes through loud and clear. I don't think it's appeasing anybody's sort of white guilt at all. And I think he's not maybe seeing it for the full film that it is. And then you also have the student demonstrations. There's so much more going on. But this was his life. He's telling you how it happened in his middle class existence. And he's not necessarily saying that this was a good thing. He's just saying this was someone that I loved and this is how she was treated.
I want to ask you about Green Book. Now, I actually really liked Green Book. I understand some of the criticisms of the film, but it also seems that the conversation about Green Book right now is not as much about the movie, but about the filmmakers, about what Peter Farrelly has done in the past. He co-wrote and directed the film, about Nick Vallelonga, who co-wrote and co-produced the film, have said in the past. Do those issues weigh on your mind? Are you able to judge the movie for the movie itself, or do those things start to cloud your opinion of it? Because I understand how a lot of people are affected by what's happened outside of the film.
Yes, I understand that too. I'm able to judge it. I didn't even know some of the stuff back when I first saw the film, which was many months ago, back when a lot of us saw it at Toronto and the early film festivals. And I still felt this movie was lacking and borderline racist. The fried chicken scene I found just wince-inducing. Teaching a black musician about black music also. And just in general, I found it to be kind of a sitcom-y, formulaic film. So yes, now that we know this stuff, that doesn't help. But I think for the most part, critics do try to divorce all that. I think in this case, it's not that hard to judge the film by itself.
Now, the Academy has made a very concerted effort to lower the average age of its voters and diversify its membership. And I think there are a couple places where I saw that in action. And I think there's no better example than the documentary feature race. Most of the pundits that I pay attention to not only said, Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Fred Rogers documentary, was going to be nominated, but was the favorite to win the documentary feature Oscar. It was not nominated. And I think, who knows what was in its place, but I'm going to talk about a movie that was nominated, Minding the Gap, very personal, very small, very interesting documentary about masculinity, kind of about skateboarding. I thought it was a fascinating film. Does not strike me as a classic Oscar documentary feature, and yet here it is in the race.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right that that is where we see the younger, more diverse population of new Academy members really striking a powerful chord. I think Minding the Gap is a wonderful film, and I'm really happy to see it in there. I also thought that Won't You Be My Neighbor was a really good film, and I would have liked to have seen it in there. But it's about a surrogate family that's formed through these skateboarding connection of young men whose maybe their regular families are rather dysfunctional. So they form this family, and it's almost tangentially about skateboarding, although there's some great skateboarding scenes. So I'm really happy to see it in there, and I'm really happy. I think maybe having Yalitza Aparicio in there, too, is a sign of younger, more diverse, you know, as Best Actress. Younger, more diverse members, and you know, having Pavel Pavlikowski in there as opposed to Bradley Cooper, I think
for directing Cold War.
I think there are some definite signs that we have a different Academy now.
But even if we look more closely at, say, the directing race, there's not a woman among the director nominees. And if you look at the supporting actress race, in every category, there's a person of color. But it doesn't feel like great strides are being made. You talked about Yalitza Aparicio from Roma. Regina King from If Beale Street Could Talk was nominated, but the film itself was not for Best Picture. So where do you see the shortcomings from your perspective in the nominations about how the Academy still has some work to be done in recognizing a broader spectrum of filmmaking?
Definitely, there's some still work to be done. And you're right. That almost could feel, I mean, these were all worthy performances, the one person of color in each category, but we certainly needed more. Michael B. Jordan, for instance, in Black Panther. John David Washington would have also been worthy. So, you know, there's some other folks in there, too. And I think that Deborah Granik for directing Leave No Trace should have been in there. Tamara Jenkins for Private Life should have also been in there. There's, you know, some definite omissions there. It's still a white male-dominated you know, list of nominees, a still white male dominated Academy. And that's changing, but not fast enough.
Claudia Puig is the president of the LA Film Critics Association. You will hear her very often as a Film Week critic on Air Talk. Claudia, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Great to see you too. Thank you for having me.
Coming up, the Oscar nominated actresses from Roma. Yalitza Aparicio received an Oscar nomination this morning as the lead actress in Roma, and her path to this moment is quite a story. A couple of years ago, she had just received her teaching degree when her sister convinced her to audition for a movie, even though she'd never done any acting. Meanwhile, Marina de Tavira, an accomplished actress in Mexican cinema, also auditioned for the same film. Over months, both women went through a semi-mysterious casting process before they were ultimately asked to play the key women in Alfonso Cuarón's childhood memoir, Roma. De Tavira, who also earned an Oscar nomination today for Best Supporting Actress, plays Sofia, based on Cuarón's mother. Aparicio plays Cleo, based on his childhood nanny. I spoke with both actresses at the Telluride Film Festival last September, where Roma had its U.S. premiere. They were joined by Yalitza's interpreter, Gabriela Murga. We'll start with Marina de Tavira describing her audition process.
Well, I was called for an audition for a movie, and they didn't tell me who the director was. And it was not an audition like any other, because the only thing I had to do was sit down and talk about my life. Whatever I wanted to say about my life, how my childhood was, who were my parents, not really about my job or my life as an actress, but most my life as a person. And then I didn't hear about them like for months. And then one day they called me, they wanted to see me again. I still didn't know who the director was. And then I went again, they gave me a little scene and to memorize right in that moment. I did it, and in the end they told me it was a movie that was going to be directed by Alfonso Cuarón. So my heart really stopped there. And they told me that they were gonna, if they called me before 12 at night, I will be meeting Alfonso the next day, and if they didn't call, I wouldn't be meeting Alfonso the next day. So I was like really anxious, trying not to look at the phone at all to see the what hour it was. And then it was 12 at night and they hadn't called. So I said, okay. But 10 minutes later, they called. So I got to meet Alfonso the next day and we worked on a scene. And then I didn't hear again of them for 1 month. And then one day they call me again that they were going to take pictures of me with some clothes. So I went there and that's the day I met Yalitza. She was there. They left us together for a long time. We had a conversation. And then they started putting clothes on us, taking pictures. And at the end of that session, Alfonso sat with the two of us and he said that he wanted to invite both of us to a movie that was very special for him and that he hoped that we had the time to do it and that we were able and happy to do it. And well, it was really a moment I will never forget.
Yalitza, unlike Marina, you hadn't done a lot of acting. How did you find out about this movie? What was your first contact from Alfonso Cuarón about being in Roma?
Bueno, realmente no he hecho nada para el cine. Yo no estudié para actuación ni nada de esto.
I've never done anything in the movie industry before at all. Actually, I've never studied to become an actress or anything at all. I just graduated to become a teacher there where I live in Tlaxiaco in Oaxaca. Actually, I went to the casting because my sister wanted to know what a casting was all about, but I didn't have a clue and I just went. And once I was there, after I did what they told me, they said, okay, if we like what you did, we will call you, we'll keep in touch. Then they called me. And I was supposed to go to Oaxaca, to the capital of the state. But my parents said, no way. We don't trust these people. We don't know who they are. We don't know what's the purpose. You're not going. And well, then finally, my mom said, okay, I'll go with you. She went with me. After that, they called me and asked me to go to Mexico. My parents again said, no way. But well, in the end again, my mom, they were allowed me to bring my mom with me. And I did. And I didn't have a clue who Alfonso Cuarón was. Not a clue. So I started looking up him on the internet, but just the pictures. I just saw the pictures. Once I got to the casting place, I did the casting. I went through the casting process. And what I liked is that he spoke to me as if he knew me from a long time ago. So I trusted. And he asked me to have peace of mind and to take it easy. And he said, just do what you normally do. And that was my casting process.
Yalitza, even if you didn't know who Alfonso Cuarón was, did you know who your co-star was? Had you ever seen any of her acting? And do you remember the first time that you met her in making this movie?
No, tampoco conocía nada de ella.
No, not at all. I guess I'm kind of far from all this. So the first time I saw her and I met her was right at the casting place. And well, I was told I was going to be there for my last test of the casting. And so I was there and I was expecting to maybe see arriving girls that would look like me. But instead, I saw her arriving. And as you can see, she's beautiful. She's tall. She's white skin and she's thin. And I didn't have a clue who she was. But we greeted each other. Then we were left there alone for a while. And we started chatting about where we were from and whatever. I don't really know if that was a strategy of Alfonso Cuarón to find out on our chemistry or anything, but that's how it happened.
This is a movie that is very personal to Alfonso Cuarón and his childhood and his growing up. And yet both of you as actors have experiences that in some ways are very familiar to what Alfonso went through. So how much of your own story, of your own history, were you able to bring to the character, even though it's based on people that Alfonso knew himself very well?
Well, quite a lot. And I started discovering this while I was playing Sofia and during the filming process. I was born in the early 70s. And in the early 80s, my mother went to a similar process as Sofia in a society quite the same, in a moment in where for a woman to be left by her husband was like really hard. And all this started coming to me while I was playing Sofia. Memories started arriving, and I had to go to a process of my own childhood while I was filming, remembering the day my father left, the day they told us when I have a brother and a sister, and the day my mother told us that he was leaving. And so at the end, I think that as this is really personal for Alfonso, but in some way, it gets really personal to all the people that were involved and to the people that see the film.
Sí, es cierto, es una película muy personal de él, pero lo que él muestra en esa película ha pasado en muchos hogares.
Well, it's true. This is a very, very personal movie for Alfonso, but what he shows in this, what he shows us in this movie, has happened in many, many households, many homes, like mine. My case is similar. In this case, my mom, that is the example I always follow, she is very alike to the nanny that I play. She also takes care of her own family, but she takes care of that family, and they feel they are their family. And she takes care of the children just as she would take care of us. The same way. Now, speaking about when the scene where the baby situation happens, well, I went through something very similar because of my sister's situation. Thanks God, my nephew is fine, but the process was very, very tough, and I did go through something exactly like that.
Were you gonna add something? Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Here, the magical thing is that I don't think Alfonso really knew about all these personal references, because they didn't ask us that during the audition process.
Yeah, Lisa, this movie is set at a time when there are a lot of things that are going badly in Mexico. The PRI government is cracking down on dissidents. There's protests where protesters are being massacred. And there are a lot of people from states like Oaxaca who are coming into Mexico City to work, you know, in homes as domestic workers. Even though you weren't alive in that period of Mexican history, how has Mexico changed for the better, or how has it remained the same in terms of problems with class and people with money taking away land from people who don't have money?
A mi punto de vista, yo creo que no ha cambiado mucho.
I believe it has not changed a lot. I can say that still today we continue to suffer according to our gender, according to the color of our skin, according to the social class, because that determines who you are, what is the place you are supposed to be in, and the opportunities you are given.
Con respecto a lo de las tierras.
Now, speaking about the land situation, it's the same still today. And this is because there's people who do not know their own rights. They don't know how to take care of their land. And we have these politicians, at least in my community, normally those who come and take these lands are politicians. And the sad part is they come and take the land to destroy it, while the people of my community would like to protect nature that they have in their lands.
Marina, Yalitza, Gabriela, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. A beautiful interview.
Muchas gracias.
Coming up, the production designer who made history with today's Academy Award nominations.
Southern California, the home of Hollywood, Dodgers, Disneyland. Sometimes it feels like paradise. But any second now, that could change, because a big earthquake is coming.
This will happen. There's no likelihood of it not happening. We are not stopping plate tectonics.
When the earthquake hits, our world will be shaken. So what can you do to prepare? I'm Jacob Margolis, host of KPCC's new podcast, The Big One, your survival guide. Listen in Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Some Oscars history was made today. Hannah Beekler became the first African-American ever to be nominated for production design. Buechler worked on Barry Jenkins' Oscar-winning movie Moonlight. She also was a production designer on the film that accompanied Beyoncé's album Lemonade. Before that run of high-profile projects, Buechler worked in horror films and commercials, but it was the independent drama Fruitvale Station, directed by Ryan Coogler, that was a pivotal point in her career. Her collaboration with Coogler continued in Creed and with Black Panther. I spoke with Buechler before the Marvel superhero movie was released last year. Buechler talked about the challenges and opportunities in designing the world of Wakanda, but she started by telling me about a key piece of advice that she received from a colleague.
That's advice I got some time ago from Wynn Thomas, who is the designer on, he's a mentor of mine and the designer on
Hidden Figures, right? Yep.
Spike Lee's designer. And he had said to me, I was in a place where I felt like I was in a rut and I wasn't really moving forward in my career. This is before Fruitvale. And he called me and he said, you know, if you don't connect with a script, don't do it. You know, when you're coming up, you just want to work to get the experience. You don't really say no to anything because you want everything.
Well,
and yeah.
Funny you say that because I looked up some early credits of yours and here's some of them where strippers go to die.
Uh-huh.
You were the set decorating consultant. It looked like a murder. It was a short film set in a strip club.
Yes.
Quarantine 2. I missed Quarantine 1. Quarantine 2 Terminal, which was a horror movie set inside an airplane.
Yeah.
And then a movie called Husk, which looked like a kind of a Children of the Corn knockoff.
Yes.
So is that the period where a gig is a gig?
Yes.
I mean, and are those jobs that actually you get some experience out of?
Yes, absolutely. I got a lot of experience. I built my resume on that and the experience came from understanding the logistics, understanding the business side. And then also when you're doing a low-budget independent horror film, you really get to play with what your ability is creatively. So I kind of used it as a platform, a learning platform for myself. And then by the time I talked to Wynn, which was sort of after The Husk and Fertile Ground and Worst Prom Ever and those type of films, and he said that to me, and he said, get an agent. The first script they gave me was Fruitvale Station.
With Ryan Coogler.
Right. And I read the script, and that what Wynn had said to me just really resonated because I just connected instantly with that script. And I called the agency and I said, I want to meet. Can you get me a meeting with Ryan? And then we met over Skype because I was in New Orleans and he was in the Bay. And that's sort of when the trajectory of my career changed.
When you work with a filmmaker like Ryan Coogler on Fruitvale and then on Creed and then on Black Panther, how do you make sure that the money doesn't change the aesthetic? That even though you have more resources with a movie like Black Panther, you're still working the way that you work and the things that are important to you are still important to you?
It was a challenge for us. For Ryan and I, we saw the opportunity to create something with Marvel that they haven't done. You know, that's the way I looked at how I would utilize the money is I had more of an opportunity to bring place into it. And because it wasn't a place that existed or had really been defined in any other film.
You're talking about Wakanda?
I'm talking about Wakanda. We could really, you know, play with that. And we wanted to do a lot of practical builds. We didn't really want to use a lot of blue screen. And that's also where the money went, was to creating all of these builds and even some, you know, of the exterior stuff that you see in the trailer. We built, you know, the waterfall.
With all the people all over.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It was fantastic to have that water being real, being live, being there, and people waiting in it all day, every day, and fighting in it and doing the thing that they're doing and having the extras. And when you see something like that for the first time that you did, that you worked on for months, it just took my breath away.
I mean, what you're describing also is something that is both a great kind of work opportunity, but also in some ways kind of an obligation to create a world that is based in Africa. It's mm-hmm. a fictional world to play kind of God and design this African world that doesn't exist. You're not replicating Philadelphia.
Right.
You're not building a diner in Miami. You're creating something out of whole cloth, but you get to create it as it's going to be seen by a lot of people and establish a worldview that is kind of important.
It is. It's the first time I think I really did a world building on that. And it was a lot of research. I mean, we went to Africa. I was there for quite some time. And then Ryan and the producers joined. It was talking to people. It was taking pictures of everything and connecting. We were in South Africa mainly, connecting with it, you know, with the motherland, and understanding all of the tradition, all the different tribes, how they responded to each other, what things were important in their lives. So that was part of building that world. And then pushing it all into the future. So for me, it was always understanding that Wakanda had been there for 10,000 years. And then what does it look like now? And there was a lot of discussion because it was supposed to be a place that was never colonized, too. So what does that look like?
Because what you can do through all that research is you can represent the way in which Africa would be were it not colonized.
Absolutely.
Which is a big thing.
It's a huge thing. And it was daunting because I felt a lot of responsibility to get it right. And I'm hoping, I hope people can look at it and really feel like, okay, yeah, this feels good. This feels right. It doesn't feel false in some way, and that this could have been what happened.
Hannah Beekler is a production designer. Her credits include Moonlight, Fruitvale Station, Creed, Beyonce's Lemonade, and Black Panther.
I'll hail the king, man.
Hannah, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Hannah Beekler made history today as the first African-American ever to receive an Academy Award nomination for production design. And that's our show for today. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. You can find us at The Frame. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Horn. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Tell me what you gonna do to me. Confrontation ain't nothing new to me. You could break a bullet, break a...